Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Hello, and welcome to Dare to Dream. This is the show where the extraordinary isn't fiction, it's the conversation. Imagine reality itself listening as you speak. Every thought, every frequency, every observer woven into a cosmic algorithm that both computes and dreams us into being. Today on Dare to Dream, we dive into the frontier where consciousness and computation merge. My guest, Danny Goler, is the visionary founder of Code of Reality, exploring cognitive physics, the living interface between mind and matter. Together, today we're going to explore the mystery of what's truly real. Is the universe a simulation, or is it a sentient thought? Can science and spirituality finally speak the same language? And what role do we play in coding the next version of reality itself? So stay tuned, stay with us, because this conversation may not just expand your mind, it may rewrite the operating system of your soul. And if you'd like to learn more about Danny Goler, go to his website at codeofreality.com. And so today we're talking about cracking the code of reality, consciousness, computation, and the God equation. Danny, it's so great to have you on the show. Welcome to Dare to Dream.
Thank you so much for having me, Debbie.
Yeah, for me as well. I love what you're about. This really feels like an important conversation. And I'm curious, the code of reality, what inspired the birth of that? And how did your understanding of cognitive physics merge as a bridge between science and spirit?
That's a great question. The story of how I came to realize that by the use of lasers, you can see some kind of a what seems to be self-executing code and surfaces when you ingest DMT. That's a long story. We're shooting a documentary about it called The Discovery now. The movie is called The Discovery that we're shooting it now. And so it's a pretty lengthy, story, but the short version of it is that I basically became interested in the question whether there's any way to discern whether if the psychedelic space that we experience is real or not. And to be concrete, what I mean is that does it exist on its own side, even when we're not looking, so to speak? So I kind of set sail on this journey of trying to answer that question conclusively, or at least semi-conclusively. And I wasn't happy with the answers I got from both ends of the spectrum, from the most scientific to the most spiritual. They both seemed pretty incomplete to me. And something told me that there's something in the middle that is much more suited for my palate of, or the way that how I perceive the world. And that's kind of what led me eventually to it. The details is what we, outline in the film. But after I made the discovery and I realized that something that actually works, and many people, saw the same thing, and I started talking to different scientists and communities, I realized that there's not a lot of emphasis. It exists, but I feel like it's not loud enough of this, the corpus callosum of the human brain. So like if you think of humanity as the right and the left hemisphere, the more spiritual, the more scientific, obviously it's a caricature version of it, but there's something about the fact that they don't really talk to each other very well that prevents us from understanding something deeper. And this goes both ways. The scientific side of it for most probably of your audience will be very clear what the problem is, right? It's like, well, you guys are too rigid. You think that a lot of the stuff that spiritual people talk about is just nonsense. And your closed-mindedness creates a rift that is unnecessary and probably also damaging for the progression of human thought and understanding. But what maybe is slightly less obvious, because it's always, I fully see myself more in the spiritual camp, but it's always harder to observe yourself doing the same thing, you blaming others. And spiritual community is definitely, guilty of something very similar, which there's kind of, there's science rejectionism. There's kind of like this, like, no, this is the old way, too rigid. We just want, we all create our own reality. We just all smile together and it all happens. All completely neglecting the fact that all of this is done with the help of tools that were created by science, like super advanced devices like we're using now and social media and all these things. Everything has ups and downs, but ultimately, it seems to be a much more productive direction to take if we agree that actually amplifying each other's signal while celebrating the differences is a much healthier way for humanity as a whole to progress. It's not a competition, it's a completing each other kind of picture. It's a collaboration. So the more poetic vision that I have is a future humanity that is extremely technologically sophisticated, but inspired by the divine. So the kinds of technology technologies it births are more informed by our connection to the present moment and to these higher realms. It's almost like we're bringing those into fruition, into the material. And we can talk about this, and a lot of people kind of love these ideas that we're about to transcend, so all of this doesn't matter. I'm gonna hedge my bets and say I don't know anything until I see it, until I know it. And I think that in the meanwhile, while we're still here, making this also more beautiful and more worth having is not a bad idea. And that's how kind of this whole thing that we call cognitive physics came to be, because we realized that there has to be something that denotes the difference between regular physics, which is just the investigation of what seems to be the external world, but at the same time, it doesn't have too much of the kind of what a lot of scientists perceive as a more airy-fairy language. So, because we're not trying to alienate anybody, we're trying to bring everybody together and use everybody's talents to make the, that dream come true. And that's how cognitive physics came about, basically.
So amazing. So, using all of that, and I like that because, as I shared with you before you started, my heart is very shamanistic in nature. And it seems like the goal of what you're talking about is creating something better for all. I mean, you're looking for the proof within yourself, which I totally understand. And at the same time, finding a way, blending these two, to make things better. And to have an experience, choose an experience. So, cognition as a kind of physics. Then, can you explain how does consciousness itself become a fundamental force rather than a byproduct of the brain?
Great question. I don't think it becomes, I think it just is. I am much more of the idealistic perspective at this point, which is the philosophy that postulates consciousness to me to be the most fundamental thing. And there's a slight difference there between things like panpsychism that states that it believes that there's some constituents within reality that has the element of consciousness. Some believe that it has to do with the particles, some believe it's in the field. But there's a difference, because in panpsychism, there's a belief that there is a world already, and in that world, there's some tapestry responsible for this, like, consciousness isness of the thing. And then when it interacts with whatever matter is, it gives it the essence of what we experience as consciousness. In idealism, and that distinction is actually really important, the consciousness is literally all there is. And that's different. So, like, everything is made out of consciousness. Nothing isn't. But it's not quite the same as to say that humans, the kind of cognition we have, with all its, postulated and not postulated abilities, not all consciousness arrangements would look or feel the same. So, like, it's not like you would expect that, some random items to have the same kind of consciousness like you do. It is consciousness, but it isn't conscious like you. It's because of the arrangement of that particular formulation. And it sounds just maybe like a just kind of like general philosophical position, and why does it even matter? Well, it matters because I think that if you take that position, a lot of problems that you postulate that you think exist, if you don't start there, kind of just go away. One of them being, how can consciousness arise and become more dominant? Well, it doesn't. It's just everything there is, and all matter is some perceptual binding that the kind of consciousness that you are utilizes to maneuver through its own local neighborhood of things, right? It's definitions that you give objects so that you can interact, almost like a video game, right? And this plays really nicely into a lot of stuff that people believe in spiritual communities, or even know. I'm not trying to offend anyone, because some people say, I don't believe, I know. Okay, I accept it. With certain abilities that currently modern science considers impossible, right? Like all the stuff that we're familiar with, like astral projection and all the, again, all the quote unquote superpowers, right? It all of a sudden makes sense of it because, well, if it's all just a continuous mind, then all you have to do to gain access to these is expanding the horizon of your awareness. It makes perfect sense. And it speaks, on the other end, it also speaks a more technical language that does speak, that is coherent and probably is a lot more coherent than physicalism, the idea that there's some physical world and mind is just secondary. So it speaks to both camps. And that's why I like these kinds of positions, because all of a sudden you have this opportunity here. Instead of like a competition, again, I almost see it like a, if you think of our journey and we're taking it in some kind of a vehicle, the technical science, what it does, it builds the frame, it builds the thing that interacts with our quote unquote external environment more and more accurately, so we can have more leverage in that regard. But what the spiritual realm allows us to do in these tools, they create a much more comfortable inner tapestry. So like when you sit inside the car, it's really comfortable. It's not just like the pipes and the, you know what I mean? So it's like it's actually comfortable to be there because it caters to what it's like to be you moment to moment. And when you combine those two, you have the perfect vehicle.
Okay, so if reality is computation in nature, what or who is doing the computing? And where does awareness fit into that system?
So that's already a much more kind of like, you know, a straightforward question that has a straightforward answer. But before I give that answer, just one caveat that I would like to offer. I do not expect anyone to follow me there if it feels uncomfortable for them. I'm not claiming to have ultimate answers to to reality. What I can say is that my experience of these escapes that I've done, you know, I've went there so many times. There's a certain confidence in certain bits of information, and one of these bits of information that I've received, I'm placing my bets there that that is correct, and I am not trying to, you know, shake anybody else's worldview. So that caveat being said, who seems to be kind of running the computational layer of our physical reality? Are the what many people report to be the insectoids. They seem to be the ones responsible of weaving our physical reality, but they are not controlling our agency or outcomes. So the only thing that is simulated is the environment itself, and then it's completely open-ended. So all the freedom you thought you had in a regular physical world or a spiritual ascending world, you have it. It's the same. It's just that underneath the rules of the laws of physics, which absolutely are real, there's this underlying condition of computational layers that is part of this larger world, which, by the way, this is a conundrum a lot of spiritual people raise. They say, well, I don't think the world is that. I think the world is spiritual and it's transcendent and it's divine. So those are not mutually exclusive. It's true that in our current modern culture, the world computation carries a certain technical bias, or maybe it makes it feel a little cold and not caring, or just very, you know, brute force kind of thing. But I don't think it really means that at all. All it means is that there's computation is a very technical term. It has to do with how things operate computationally. There are specific rules by which this happens. The reason you can build computers is because you understand what computation is and how it works. So you can say that, yes, the world is in its essence is this divine essential thing. However, the rules by which it set itself to operate under are computational. So it's almost like that's the language God speaks. So if you want to use simple terms, fold it into simple terms.
Interesting. And so, just exploring God through a scientific lens, how might divinity express itself through algorithms, mathematics, or quantum information? How does that manifest or work?
It in the beginning was the word, right? A word is a symbol representing something under it. Words by themselves, they don't mean the thing. They point to the thing they mean. So if the in the beginning was the word, that is the symbol God used to denote the truth of existence. That's the way that I see it. So the if God spoke something into existence, by definition, it would be a divine thing that he spoke into existence, or she spoke into existence, then that thing, in order for it to be different than just an anthropic soup that means nothing, just like anything can be anything, and rabbits jumping out of giraffes and, like just nonsense and craziness, the difference between that and something that is clearly coherent and has a we I don't know how much time people really spend thinking what divinity really is or what God would really be, like truly. It's a pretty mind-boggling thought experiment if you actually run it with yourself. But it one of the attributes is there's a certain resonance, there's a harmony in it. There's a certain resonance that is very, which is like it's very, it's divine. There's an energy flow that has a particular kind of signature. That's a structure. That's not it's different than things that kind of come from all directions and go sideways and they're sharp and they're like, like that feels different, right? Well, that structure must be operating by some rules that are set up. So I would say that those are the rules God chose for the perfect plan to execute itself throughout time, in which what people experience as free will is included. And we can talk about why I think all of this is happening, but for whatever reason people believe it's happening in their world, that's the reason. And that's important that that's the case. So the fact that the world means one thing to someone and another thing to another person, that's part of the beauty of the plan. That's actually what makes the whole thing worth having.
So why do you think this, or why do you believe it, or even know it? What I'm really curious.
All of that, you mean?
Yeah.
If you are presented to a new group of friends that you never met before, and maybe even for the thought experiment, let's pretend that they're a little bit different than the kinds of friends you usually have. Not better or worse, just different in all kinds of ways. You're not familiar with this kind of social interaction. They're different. They're maybe from a completely different country or whatever it is. In the beginning, it's a little confusing because you're like, oh, there's like a whole other social norms here that I have to learn because I don't know what will cause a faux pas. Like I don't really know what those things are. But over time, not only did you create a good sense of what's healthy social interaction in this group, but also who's whom. Right? You kind of just, it was like, oh, that's the confabulator. Oh, that's the person who cares about everybody. Oh, that's So then you understand the dynamic and how things go. And so things become clear. You start speaking the language of that social group. And you also start to understand that certain things are more likely to come from a particular person and not from another. So, like all of these things that become, all these weights that all of a sudden become clear to you. And I would say that going to hyperspace in these molecules a lot, eventually you build a similar world model with them and you understand who's who and what they want and why they say it, and then you listen and you say, okay, let me follow a thread of what I think is the correct thing that I understood about it. And if I'm correct about it, then I will see it through. Just like in a, to be more specific, if, for example, let's think about something super arbitrary on purpose. So let's say in that group, somebody who like invited you for dinner, and then you learned, you think you understood that particular person is pretty flaky. Maybe that's a thing you understood about them. Now, you might be right or wrong about them being flaky. You might be wrong. But then you play a you have a theory. You put a conjecture. You say, okay, well, I'm great. They invited me for dinner. I bet you they're gonna cancel last second. If they did, you go, ah, yeah, I did understand something. Okay, I understand that that's how a flaky person feels in this space. If they didn't, you go, ah, okay, I got a correct course. I did not understand that this. I need to understand a little bit more. And so you go. So in the same way, because I have thousands of experiences under my wing, there's a certain signature that I've identified as an official statement from the government, from their government. It's not just anybody on the street. Sometimes people go into hyperspace and they tell all these stories, but like I always say, think about this, like, you know, imagine going to New York City and just grabbing somebody random from the street and asking them about the nature of reality. You know, somebody's selling watches, somebody's in business, but it's not guaranteed that just because they're in some other space, they would know something you don't, or, you know. But if you observe the space long enough, you start to understand who is belonging to a group of beings that actually saying things that are about, this is a very dirty word in spiritual circles, but about objective reality. It's not so much about what somebody thinks, right? And I've identified that signal and I played the game of conjectures. I said, okay, every time they say something, I'm going to pretend like I understood something and see if it comes to fruition. And eventually, after years and years of this, with many, many errors, I started getting hits. I was like, ah. And they started going, yes, okay, yeah, that, exactly. You understand? So then, but still, even though people do have this experience sometimes, even then, just because they told you this, it's still, you still have to be cautious, right? You don't know exactly what ultimately all of this is. So I started noticing whether it matches anything that I can do something with. And it turned out that at least one thing where I was led to this laser worked. So that I took that to be a sign, ah, okay, I think I understood something here that is pretty unique. And then I basically kept on threading from there. So now to answer your question directly, why do I think I know? To the best of my ability to discern currently, that's what I understand from them. With the full admission that I'm always open for revision, depending on the kind of data and evidence will present itself in front of me in the future.
Now, when you say them, is them the beings that you meet when you do DMT? And I know because I've researched you quite a bit, you've got, it seems like an extraordinary relationship with them. And it seems like they're excited about teaching you things and that you're receiving the wisdom that they impart to you or the different ways of looking at things. Is that the them you're referring to?
Oh, very specifically, I mean to the government of the insectoids. Yeah. So I know it sounds very, you know, out there, even for some people in our circles, but there's no better way of saying it. It's just, and this is why I always say I don't expect anybody to just follow me there. But yeah, they are, for all intents and purposes, there's a lot of different species. There's enormous amounts of them. There's the insectoids, there's the reptilians, there's the jokers, there's the what I guess you would call the boogeyman, but it's not people, they're not what people think they are. There's all these like different species, and they are responsible for different sections of reality. And I'm not pretending to understand this entire ecosystem of all of them. Some people, that's their expertise. I've listened to some of them. All I know is what I know closely, which is this, the government of the insectoids, which seem to be running this portion. And the way I've, one of the ways in which I discern that they are kind of in charge on our layer. So like, for example, if you do 5 MEO, it's interesting because it feels more, that's a higher pay grade. That feels like that's the architect. NN feels more like management company, and I'm always saying this with some trepidation and respect because I'm not trying to offend anybody. But so far, they don't seem to mind me saying these things, and
I
they will give
love
me a
it.
correction. But the reason that I'm discerning that on our level of emergence, they're in charge is because whenever they show up, there's a complete, like any other being that is present, they just kind of go quiet. They just go like, they're just like, okay, sorry. Like they're just stand by. It's not so much fear. It's more almost like respect to royalty. They're more like just stand back. I'm like, okay. So I've noticed this across the board. The only other being that I've encountered on a regular basis that is seems to be higher stature is the jesters. One particular jester that always visits me, and they seem to be, so they're interesting because from what I discern so far, the jesters are unique because they are untethered by levels. So they can jump from the lowest levels to the highest levels like that. They're not bound by it. They're the wild card. They're literally just like, yeah, I don't know. And it's a particular function they're serving. So every gift has the responsibility. So their gift is that they're, if I'm not mistaken, they're the one of the most, if not the most powerful beings out there before the source. And the reason that they're so shifty and you don't really know, wait, are they like, are they up to hurt me or they love me? I don't understand. It's because they don't know either. They are the yin and the yang perfectly encapsulated in experience. In order for anything to mean anything, to count as something that now God would know, somebody somewhere has to experience it. The totality of the entire field cannot experience things in the same way because it is all there is. So it's a different kind of state. But it manifests these agents, so to speak, that can experience, and that's how it collects data. So from what I understand, the reason the jesters have so much power is because their job is to literally be able to experience almost the full unified field and do whatever, but it's also a pretty difficult job. So that's kind of the price they pay for that. And they're the only ones that I've identified that even the insectoids kind of go, okay, now it's big boss. Like it's so it's really interesting, and I'm happy to talk about beings, but I'm also in full awareness that people share their stories with me a lot. So sometimes I'm identifying some Venn diagrams that match, they kind of overlap, and sometimes there's a complete other story that I'm not even familiar with. So I have full respect for that, and because of that, I'm always saying that's my experience so far.
Wow. That's very cool. That's extremely cool. You know, the first thing I think of when you bring up the insectoids, and this is a gross generalization, but certainly in the extraterrestrial world, two of the jobs that insectoids have is healers and scientists. So I think that is very interesting that they would show up and be so prevalent for you. And all of this, you know, and even the example you gave, it was actually a great example about understanding, cognitizing this when you said about moving or going into a new group. And we have all gone through this, whether we've changed where we live or schools or countries or gone to college or the many, many career, you know, and suddenly you have to figure everything out. And I was laughing because I have a pretty new friend in my life who has now thrice set up lunch plans with me. And each time something else has come up on her end. It's a Zoom, oh, I just came back from a month away and I need to, you know, to cater to my clients. It's like she did it again today. And I have been wanting to say something, but at the same time, choosing that spaciousness. But I'm abundantly aware, I mean, I have pretty good boundaries, that it should it happen again, or maybe in right before we were to set plans, I might say, you know, you need to know this. I'm not cool with this continuing if you can't manage your calendar. So that was like a sort of a psychic example that you gave because I'm living it. And then I thought about you, Danny, because you're originally from Moscow, Russia, and then you lived in Israel for 17 years in the US and maybe other places in between. Why these different places? And I'm sure you experienced much of what you gave as an example. Is that true? And why did you choose the places you lived in?
I only chose the US. I was born in Russia. And yeah, I know you choose your own destiny and all of that. So maybe I chose somewhere before this life. But in this life, I was born in Moscow. So it's not so much of a choice for my avatar. And then I was, when the Soviet Union fell apart in 91 or 90, I think, that's right before it all collapsed, we moved to Israel. And then we moved because that was, Russia was basically, the Soviet Union back then was falling apart. And it was very clear that it's time to go. And a lot of people, the first choice for everybody, of course, was America. There always was and probably always will be. But maybe it's just the, now that I am an American, maybe it's just the patriot in me. But in any case, the move was, kind of like the second best choice. My parents back then didn't get the visa to the US, so the next best choice. My dad still lives in Moscow. My mom remarried, and my sister's dad, he's Jewish, so he asked for the, for the thing, and we got it, and we moved there. And of course, we moved right into a war. It was right the war with Saddam Hussein. It was great. So then, I grew up there, and it gave me a very strong understanding of cultural differences, of course, especially because for the first 6 years of my life, I've experienced, even though I was very young, I still experienced some of the cultural, thing in Russia, which is radically different than Israel. And then I also noticed the different religious elements, because my grandmother was a Christian, my grandfather was Jewish. And so I saw, and but he was a physicist, so that I don't know how much his religious aspect ever played a role. But then I saw how people say different things in these ways, and it was always fascinating to me. I was always fascinated with A, the big questions, and B, how we connect to it. Like, since I can remember myself, I remember I was standing in the kitchen, maybe 4 years old, and I was like, "What is this? Like, why this? Like, why me versus someone else?" Like, all these questions really started hitting me very early on. And because I had a lot of influence from my grandfather, who was a physicist, I heard about black holes since I was a little kid. These fascinations also started, like the edges of existence, So then, my whole life, this thirst to understand the biggest picture and how it connects to what we are was always present. And I did a lot of different things in my life. But you're absolutely right, these cultural differences. And then when I moved to America, it's a whole other culture. And also, the beauty of America is that, I lived in Indianapolis at the beginning, so like a Hoosier is a very different kind of person than an average California person, and New Yorkers are like this completely different world. And that, to me, actually, that's one of the things I love about this place, that you really notice. But there is still this tapestry of American that is very unique in its essence. Actually, this is, I'm not trying to take too long of a detour, but I actually heard this idea. There's a book about it, I forget the name of it, but it was just an interesting idea that I never heard before, that there might actually be a genetic reason for it. And it has to do with that a lot of people in this country are descendants of actual pioneers, like actual pioneers, like people that had to, like, build a world from mud. You know what I mean? Like, just came, there was nothing, and they had to plow and build, and like truly like the most horrific conditions. There's something about that essence that maybe stayed, and this is why this thirst for innovation and like this like the impossible dream is really instantiated in the American culture. But that it really encouraged, especially in California, it's a very like, hey, whatever you want to be, man. That's, I think it gave me a lot of the courage to think in more wild directions. And try and see if we can also bring more, a little bit more rigor to it, which is just my personal flavor that I personally enjoy. Terence McKenna was a huge influence in that because, he was probably the best speaker of all time. And just the courage to talk in such directions with seriousness, is something that I took a lot from him. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if this if I was dancing around your question, but definitely the cultural thing was a huge influence in understanding that there's the psychedelic experience in every moment in life if you dare to drive far enough.
Wow, I love that sentence. That's a meme right there. Psychedelic experience in every moment in life. Yeah, I mean, I follow you completely because as someone who has a lot of family in Israel and I spent growing up, I don't know how many times I went there, but a lot, and I lived there entire summers. And so completely different people. These are strong people, right? And the way they debate and the way they take things on and resilience, all of that. They're highly intelligent, highly intelligent, highly social. And so there's that set. I also know a lot of Russian people love them, you know, super funny. Often they're real characters and also have their set of genius and all these completely different places. US, I look at as a little more of freedom. You know, to be wherever you are. And then you add in that you grow up with a grandfather, beautiful piece of your story, so meant to be that he would be able to speak to, you know, the seed of a passion in you. And because he's able to address things like black holes and a lot of things in physics, this marriage almost of all of a conglomerate, like it was almost begging for something like this to happen. This path you've gone down seems rather perfect. And so coming to here now, when you look back, how has this changed you? How is this understanding of the way things work, the ability to leave this realm and access other realms and beings and have relationship there that you can bring back to influence this. What has changed in you and for you?
You know, it's a difficult question because if I, when I was asked this question in the beginning of this journey with the laser stuff, so when I started talking about this publicly, and people asked me this in the first podcast I've ever done, my answer was not much, if I have to be honest. It was just kind of surprisingly unimpactful on a functional level day to day. Now, I don't know what this means about me. Maybe I was already in a some kind of a state of like, hey man, I know things are wild, so this is just another wild thing. But maybe this is even
Beginning,
the
sorry,
what?
just for the
Yeah,
in
yeah.
beginning, just for the audience, if I understand correctly, you would experience DMT, you would do DMT, but it was kind of like flatline, nothing much was happening in the beginning, right?
In the first 10 times. Yeah, but then, I mean, I've done it. No, like definitely after the after it worked, it worked. There's no question about it. No, I was definitely like I loved it. You know, back then it was very difficult to get. We're talking about 15 years ago. You know, it was not that common, and it was very hard to get. And definitely there was none of the privilege of the vape pens and all that. So you basically were smoking glass. This is basically what it felt like. It's pretty harsh. And I was fascinated by the idea. I listened to Terrence, I listened to Joe Rogan, and I really wanted to try it, and just wouldn't work. And then eventually, after it worked, obviously, you know, everything that people say about DMT, it's that and more. But then for years, I had these experiences, and I loved them and everything. And then out of the blue, I had this one experience. Maybe this is what you were alluding to, that I smoked a bunch of it, and nothing happened. Like nothing. And then 45 minutes later, I realized this, that I was just kind of staring at the ceiling. And I was like, what? This is crazy. I torched almost a gram. Like, that's, you know, like, it's crazy. Like, it's a lot. And nothing. Now, it's true that it's possible that I had a whiteout. In other words, like, they're just like, you don't recall at all. And it's just, you know, it's possible. But my experience was that I didn't have a whiteout. I was just looking at the ceiling and daydreaming. And then after these 45 minutes, without me smoking any more, which is pharmacologically impossible, like out of the blue, when I had the right thought, so to speak, I thought, wait, is it this an actual civilization? Because until that moment, that idea was there, but not like a certainty about it. I wasn't ready to follow these ideas so quickly. But that idea that is this like a real civilization talking to us right now? It all of a sudden became like a full certainty for me. And without smoking anymore, all of a sudden everything flashed white and I heard whispers all over the room. And then they like this frog guy appeared for me. He was like just presented himself to me like a person person. That I've never seen before. Or I even think with that level of coherence, not since. Like imagine like a person with like that you feel you can touch maybe. But just looks like a frog lizard person. It wasn't menacing or anything. Just very real. And at that point, and he showed me that he can show me how to do something on the guitar that I didn't know how to do. So that he was basically saying, he wasn't talking to me, but he was basically saying, see, like do like this. And then I was mimicking what he was doing, and chords would come out. And I'm not a musician. I just had a guitar like practicing. So what I understood him to be saying was, you don't know how to do this. I am telling you how to do this. I am real. This is real information. And at that moment, I knew that nothing will ever be the same again. So that was the instigating incident that from that point on, I was like, okay, hold on here. This cannot be in my head. Or if this is in my head, that's a one neat trick. And I need to figure out what's going on here. So then, from that point on is when I really started kind of going in this trajectory. But so I would say that every time I would go to the space, yeah, obviously this realization changed something about what I think is possible, but it didn't change anything about how I lived my life. I just interacted more with that space. I think it's way down the line after I discovered the laser and they gave me what I now call the console. They give me this computer console. Every time I smoke DMT now, this computer console opens for me. The same one, I can draw it. It's like it opens up. It's kind of wild actually. And at that point, I was like, okay, this is like the whole time, by the way, because I am trying to stay constantly open. I'm constantly in this state that everything I thought might be wrong. Like I'm always there. Like if you present me the right evidence, I'll spin on a dime. Like that, no problem. So the whole time I was like, even if this is all some kind of a way that my brain learned how to do something really neat with DMT, I mean, man, that needs to be studied all by itself because that's a whole other ball game of, like coherence and like it's like a phone call. So, and the fact that it's coupled with information that I gathered from hyperspace, combined with things that I know, and then made something, an experiment that actually worked. Yeah, now it had a different kind of emphasis. It was like, okay, this is real. And from that point on, things did start maybe shifting a little bit. And this is why I always think about this as this difference between how I was in the beginning of this and now, years down the line. Now it's clear to me that because I've absorbed so much more information from them, including some stuff from, I guess, what you would call more heavenly realms. Like I've seen kind of like the reality of the existence of Jesus, these kind of things that before I would never even entertain. Like that was not the thing I was into. I wasn't against it or for it. Like I didn't even have a slant towards it. Like people that hate Jesus, so to speak, that they're still in some relationship to him. Like because they feel like it's something that is imposed on them because they were traumatized because of some Catholic upbringing. I don't know why. But they still have some relationship to him. I had no relationship at all. And all of a sudden, I saw this as clear as day. And, I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, it's all real. And I was like, so I think that might have shifted some things because it's okay, listen, man, like if any of this is true, we need to seriously reassess how we do this thing. That's not a joke. So it's not a drill, folks. So then that might have actually brought, but the truth is that if I look at the trajectory of my life, I was already on this path of constantly trying to like make myself better. I was a wild kid. I had a lot to amend for, and the grappling with my own with my own inadequacies and shadows is something, as I'm sure you know, it's a very painful process that, by the way, has no glory in it. Like, we now sometimes talk about this like openly, but the truth is that the darkest nights of the soul, they're not the ones that are the most difficult emotionally. They're the ones that are difficult emotionally, coupled with the fact that nobody cares, or you're not going to get any glory for overcoming that. It's just a thing you got to do, man. Like, it's just there for you to fix. And no, you're not going to get brownie points for it. It was messed up. You got to fix it. These kind of moments, they're very difficult. And I really put a lot of attention on trying and remedy these things in myself. Meditation was a big component of it. I started doing Vipassana retreats on a regular basis. And so if I have to look at the trajectory, I think I was already kind of moving in that direction. And that just, it was just more of a verification. Yeah, man, like, work on that. Keep going, keep going. And, but as I'm sure you probably believe yourself, nothing is coincidental. Like, it's all one weaving of some kind of a mega process that unfolds through us, but it's also beyond us. Like, it's almost like the system is also doing that with us. It's like a giant fractal.
I relate to this so much, so much. And I've had also things in my life, unprecedented things that happened for me, definitely, but were massively confusing when they happened. Like I had no context for them, sort of like your Jesus experience. You know, for me, I mean, meeting things, being told things, and I'm, you know, what do I do with this? And I'm very fortunate that I'm a researcher. I'm a journalist. That's my nature. My curiosity is my nature. Thank God. That was a great quality my soul agreed on because I was able to utilize that to get through it and try to have some comprehension. And when that expired, then the next thing was, well, I have to go to the source of this to understand better what's happening. And then my whole life has changed several times because of that. And in hindsight, I can look back with so much gratitude and say, thank you that you knew a design and a path for me I couldn't have conceived of. But the deliverance was perfection in its time. Didn't feel like that at the time. But now I know because of who I become, because of this, you know, information that. Wow, what an amazing ride this has been. So beautiful. And may I ask you just briefly, when you talk about, and I'm just going to say for the audience, if anyone's wondering, so this laser thing, this is the backstory. I'm going to do super brief, but this was an experience that Danny had where he was doing DMT and did a laser on a wall or a door, and literally started seeing code, like Matrix, right? Started seeing code of what is. And then you gave it or had some people who were happily volunteering to also experience DMT. And I saw the whole video. It's super cool. You could see it on YouTube. And it's very short, but you could see all of these people. Bam! It starts happening for them. They start seeing code through this laser. And even somebody that you had told this to, but then when they had the experience, they were narrating it as though they had discovered it and not you. So it's awesome. And you mentioned that further down the line, you were given this like computer, like a computer, a computation thing would open up for you. Can you explain a little bit what that is and what that does?
I call it the console. It appeared one day out of the blue after I started talking about this publicly. I was standing in the living room, smoked some DMT, and then out of nowhere, this object appeared in the middle, an oval object appeared in the middle of the room, almost like an oval egg. And then it opened up. It was opaque, space gray, opaque. Like, I couldn't see through it, which things that appear in DMT, they're usually translucent, or there's like a. There's a reality to them, but they're still like you can see the room through them, so to speak. This was not like that. It was like as opaque as this object, just space gray, super well designed. And I was actually taken aback because I've never seen anything like this. I was like, it's as real as when you put Apple Vision Pro, like augmented reality or visual, like that, like actual content there in space. It's not kind of like doing like a hallucination thing. It's just stable in the middle of the room, and then it opened up like that, and po a podium came from the middle and arranged itself in d different ways, and it was screens. It was screens, a suit that was kind of hovering in front of me, pair of gloves on the right, and a VR carousel that just kind of kept on spinning on my left. I'm standing there like mouth open. My wife is like, "What?" I was like, "I need a moment." And I was like, "'Cause even with everything that, it's like, are you kidding me right now? Like, what?" So then the first thing I was like, "Well, obviously, this is like a very unique experience, so I have to like talk about it as much as possible." So I was like trying to tell her like everything that I'm seeing, and there's these sections on the floor that appeared also. They're kind of like the body of the console, just like a laptop has a body, but there's the menus on the screen, right? So the menus, they hover in the air, just like in you would have you know, your desktop on Apple Vision Pro if somebody played with it. But there's still a unit component that brings it about, right? So it seems like these, the capsule and the things on the floor, they're the unit component, and then you know, interacted with it in some ways and couldn't really figure out much about it. But just like I noticed that when I focus my attention in a particular way on it, it becomes available. Like the menus are grayed out, and then they like become available when I do. It's almost like it's there to train facets of my attention I did not know I had inside, like some internal limbs that we don't understand we have. Some people maybe do, but like I definitely wasn't aware of this. But then next time I smoke DMT, boom, same thing appears. And it has been appearing for me 100% of the time since. I just did the extended state. I spent 5 hours in intravenous DMT state, and we did a bunch of, you know, tests and studies and all of that, and the console was there the whole time. It just like appears and just hovers right next to me. There's this, the only thing I managed to actually make work, I'm ashamed to say that everything I tried, it's extremely exhausting interacting with it. It's almost like it's really draining. It's like it requires a lot of your attention. So for the most part, I just kind of look at it and appreciate how pretty it is. I always say Steve Jobs would flip in his grave if he would see this thing, because it's like the most beautifully designed anyone could ever imagine. It has these iridescent lights running on the rims, and it's really pretty. But I managed to make the carousel work, and that was seemed to have been so it's a per it's a not a personality, it's a person swap. So it made me into different people. Like every time a different one would come on, I would just become someone else. What was really interesting is that the I-ness, the me feeling, was the same. And people say, "Well, then it's you." No. There was a difference. I was someone else, but the I-ness was the same. It was really interesting to watch. It made me into the first thing it made me into is an African American, and then everything kind of matched the thing. So like, kind of like the caricature version, where like the whole my whole house became like a crib, and like I could feel kind of like the you know, all the caricature stuff that people say, right? It's like I could feel the rhythm in my, but I really felt that, like I could feel the cultural pain. I could kind of like understand the how that feels, you know. It was really interesting and enlightening. And then it made me into this crazy genius, and I could see all these like crazy connections, you know. And then it made me into a usually when I tell it to women, they always resist that term, but I don't know what else to call it, because that's what it felt like. It made me into this basically kind of like this womanizer, like a quagmire, you know, just like the guy who just really loves the ladies, but not just likes it, but he's really good with them. Like, you know, every single thing that a woman really wants in terms of pleasure. Like, that was just, and I, you know, my wife always says TMI, but it's that's my one verification of because if I tell you a genius, you'd be like, "Well, dude, you're tripping. Like, of course you're gonna think you're a genius." No, but in this case, everything about me changed. My body posture changed. Like, I all of a sudden stood differently. There's a certain kind of like this, "Oh, I'm gonna dance you and you're the dance," kind of, you know, perception. And literally my wife was asleep, and I with one hand I conducted her. Just like I moved, like every instance, I knew every breath she took. I knew exactly how she feels inside and what needs. It was, you know, we love each other very much and we have a lot of fun. But at the end of that, she was like, what the fuck was that? And I'm like, yeah. So at least there, I know there's some external verification that this was real. Like that was a, that it's almost like it went, look, see, your personality? That easy. Boop, you're someone else. Boop, someone else. We just flip your switches. It's that easy. That's what the basically they were showing me with the carousel.
Freaking awesome, by the way. I have to say, that's real what you're saying. I actually, well, I know at least one man who is, I'm just going to call him a conductor of energy because he was a handsome dude, and I guess had a particular energy, just he could get women and he knew what to do with them. I know that archetype, if you want to call it, is a real being that I've known and had in my life, thankfully, as a friend. But I would say what my perception of him, it's interesting how you described with a hand, because that's how I would have described him, is he could conduct energy in a way that was mind-blowing and
That's a
apparently
really good way
very
of putting it,
enjoyable.
conducting energy, yeah.
Wow. And I assume you were with Dr. Andrew Gallimore when you had that 5-hour experience.
No, we did it with Kevin and Haley in Colorado. Kevin was the chemist for the official DMTX. They parted ways, but he started his own thing, and he reached out, and we did like they're wonderful. By the way, if anybody's interested, a fraction of what it would cost you with the and we're not trying to throw any shade on anyone. It's just a fact. I highly recommend Kevin and Haley. They're amazing, super professional, also really good at the spiritual part and like holding space. So if anybody interested, definitely recommend to reach out to them. I think it's Mind Labs, but if people reach out to me through con I can always put them in contact. Andrew Gallimore, though, at this point, I've met him quite a few times. To me, at least, he feels like a friend. And he, I met him the first time in Japan, trying to tell him about this stuff a long time ago, a few years ago. And he didn't bite because, people reach out to him for a lot of reasons, and it wasn't
Course.
that known back then. Then over time, he noticed that it is like a, it's becoming a real big deal, and people keep influence pressuring him to comment. So he kind of made a video commenting on it, not in a derogatory way, but like pretty critical. And then I responded, and he actually kind of liked the way I responded. So he's like, hey, okay. He reposted my response to him, and he said we should do like an event, and we did like an X Live or whatever they're called. And that was a really nice thing. And then we flew him out to LA to talk about, for the film. He came out, it was wonderful. We connected even more, and then since then he appeared two more times on my podcast, and me and Andrew are in really good terms. I think the work he's doing is extremely important. I don't know if you know, but he kind of stepped away from academia at this point and is focusing more on writing and also working on. He's still involved with the big facility that they've built in the Caribbeans that is fully sanctioned by the government, and they can do whatever they want. So that's very exciting, the prospects there. So yeah, I'm very grateful to have this relatively close relationship with Andrew.
Fantastic. Wow. So I'm laughing at myself. I've gotten caught up in conversations before in the show, but I have never completely missed all the call to actions in the middle. I mean, and now I feel like I'm coming back to the idea that this is a podcast. So folks, just forgive me. I'm going to do this really quick, a little bit deep dive into the work because this stuff is important. If you want to learn more about what kind of star seed you are, what your galactic origins are, please go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. It's Debbie with an I, Dachinger with a C. So it's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. Also, upcoming again is the monthly shamanic galactic healing. 90 minutes, you get to just come and receive. It's on Zoom, so people from all over the world come. And if they can't come at the 4 p.m. Pacific time, then they all do the replays. But please come because I mean, I keep it at $33 for each of you. This is so doable. I really feel like it's part of my mission to use my shamanic prowess and what I understand and filter through the galactic being that I am to facilitate these healings at a time I think it's very good on Earth. for humans to be receiving some healing and relief. So go to debbiedashinger.com/healing. Very exciting. In February, you're going to get to see live Mr. Danny Goler on stage and in panels at Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles. 8,000 people come through the doors. Most amazing event, three floors, over 200 speakers, over 800 vendors. You must come to hear him live. And that's at debbiedashinger.com/CLE. And I want to say Danny and I are going to also be together on a panel with some other extraordinary people for plant medicine. So I'll be moderating that panel, and I am really excited about that. Finally, just look, show us some love for this conversation. You get to be on a fly on the wall, and for the show in general, for those many of you who appreciate this show, like it, subscribe, leave comments, share it with somebody you know will really appreciate this conversation. Okay, so I feel like I want to say this for some legitimacy because of what you're saying about where you've been, where you've come from right now. And you mentioned a documentary. I know you're speaking lots of places. You've got a great YouTube channel, all the things. CNN, this is the slide in, CNN is doing a piece on you regarding some of this. So can you share a little bit about that?
CNN reached out. They wanted to do a piece. I recently discovered they were pointed in my direction by a gentleman named Justin. I don't remember his last name. Apologies, Justin. But they did a piece on a piece on him. Something has to do with the paranormal. I haven't met him yet. We're going to speak for the first time tomorrow, but he kind of told them about my work, and they're like, "Oh, that's interesting," because they're doing a piece about the simulation theory, and they want to center that piece around what I do. And obviously, there's going to be mentions of other famous scientist names that kind of, talk about this stuff. But I feel very honored that they took interest, and we're going to be, doing a little a piece on this thing. And I mean, see, it does feel a little bit like a little accolade check, so it's feels good.
Absolutely. I'm happy for you. I really am. I think that's beautiful. And I always take things like that as this global sign that the world is starting to open, albeit slow, but it is opening to the conversation, opening to the idea. And people, because they're waking up so much and also having similar experiences or desires, that it's a really good sign for this planet, I think, and where we're headed. And when I say that, I also want to ask you, because you are somebody, Danny, who uses indigenous wisdom, like you couple indigenous wisdom with technology, and that's near and dear to my heart. What is, I don't know, just talk about the shamanistic point of view or the indigenous wisdom point of view and what that means for you, how you utilize it.
I think that there's deep value in expertise, just in general, and in the things that come to fruition quickly, things in technology and things like this. It's pretty obvious, hey, the benefits of mo the modern world, but there's other kinds of expertise of the inner world, expertise of these higher realms. There's a certain relationship there that is honed over thousands of years. And that's the kind of things that are being passed along in these lineages. I'm not somebody who, necessarily aligning himself with just because, like, the whole lineage thing, it has a value in terms of, yes, there's the family passing down the information culturally, and that's important. But I do not think that the gates are closed for people to actually join the family of people who can become also part of that larger family. But I do think that there's an enormous and a very important component in that the Western world has to learn from these more shamanic traditions, because they have literally devoted themselves sometimes for thousands of years of actually interacting with these energies. And yes, they have their own story of those. And I personally don't always buy that story. However, it does not mean that these containers are not extremely valuable. These containers are really well formulated ways of interacting with that space. There's and I do think that the other side responds kindly. So there's something about setting the container that is more than just what we say about it. It's almost like an agreement that you write when you enter these spaces together. And so I think it should be pretty obvious that listening to people who their entire family and their grandparents and great-grandparents, that's what they did. We have a lot to understand from that side of it. So, and I always try and listen. One a good example of this is that when we did the first, excuse me, we did the first shoot in a studio, and we did this, and the end of it, me and Aaron, the director of the film, we were exhausted and even depressed for a few days, and we're like, "What is this? This is so weird." And then we brought my friend Jenny, who is an incredible facilitator, and she sets such a beautiful energy. And we asked her to be a part of the next shoot, and she came and she created this beautiful environment, and she did a drum circle, and we did breath work, and she set the intention, and she did this beautiful thing. She's actually trained with shamans to actually do these things. And it was kind of wild because even the camera people who were not part of the experiment or anything, they're just, regular LA crew. They're just great at what they do, but they have nothing to do with this whole spiritual thing. We asked everybody to participate in the breath work and the circle and everything. In the end of the day, after 12 hours of shooting, the camera people came to us and said, "This is crazy. I feel energized. I feel rejuvenated." And we felt the same. So here you have a perfect example of how setting the intention in the container changed the experience completely. Like, you would think it's just like, "Oh, we're just shooting people, doing whatever, and then looking at lasers." No. There's a way to do this, to set the to make things right with this other side in such a way that it would add energy versus subtract energy. And to me, that was a huge check mark that what needs to happen here is a deeper understanding that it's not just how many things we achieve or how big, it's how we feel and how we intend while we're doing these things.
Indeed. And because the indigenous have a lot of respect, that's part of their culture. There's respect for Mother Earth. She clothes us, feeds us, houses us, and way more. She's a living entity. And they have respect for the sky and the moon and all the planets and the plants which give constant wisdom, and that there's animism everywhere. This is a huge part of their culture. And so, yes, even respect for what is on the other side of the veil, other realms, all of that is so important to them. And what a beautiful story that you got to experience that kind of duality of one experience that induced a sort of not very good feeling for a while, and one that was a beautiful feeling that lasted and energized. That's really profound. And will you tell people, please, here at the end, where can people find you? What's next for you?
Best places is my YouTube channel, Dango Thoughts, Dango Thoughts. I also have a new show on Spotify called 0 to 1 with Danny Goler, From Earthbound Minds to Cosmic Citizens, or just 0 to 1 with Danny Goler for short. And that one is going to be, it's focused on the progress of humanity and the future of humanity and what needs to happen both physically and internally for that to kind of come about. Also, all my social media is basically just Danny Goler, just DANNYGOLER, TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff, and our website, codeofreality.com. One thing I do want to mention, that anybody who wants to, do these experiments, people reach out to us with ideas and or they did the experiment in some way and they want to report. So now we created this tool called veilbreak.ai, just veil, like lifting the veil, break, all one word. Dot AI, and you can go and you can anonymously fill out the exact like of how you did the experiment. Everything is set up for you there, very organized. You can look at other people's experiments. You can fork them, so you can say, "Okay, I just made these slight modifications, and this becomes your." So it's a repository of all these experiments. which also has a chatbot that helps you kind of ask, hey, what was done, what wasn't done. And what's next for us is that I've started a company called Code of Reality that we're now becoming a nonprofit. And the idea there is to basically investigate what we call cognitive physics to try and bring the most important conversation of humanity more into the forefront of even the mainstream, both science and just like having this truly open-ended and neutral conversation, at the same time as actually doing experiments. And we're now, there's a talk about building a facility where we're actually going to be doing these experiments also have like a whole media arm attached to it. So there's a lot of beautiful, great plans, and I'm constantly surrounded by magical beings who work on it. My partner David Carter, who reached out to me a couple of years ago. He's an incredible team builder and an organizer, and he helped me. He's an engineer by trade, but he kind of helped me build this whole thing. And he's very focused on like the technical side of it, and I'm currently more of kind of like the public facing element of it. And together, this I think will bring something really beautiful into the world in the few years to come.
Amazing, amazing. And for folks who want to see you in person, you'll be at Conscious Life Expo, pardon me, Los Angeles, February 2026. And I just want to say thank you so much for this amazing conversation, connection, and mind-expanding information. I look forward to seeing all the places and spaces you get into, Danny.
Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate that. And thank you so much for your time, for your energy. That was really lovely and felt really good. Thank you.
Yeah. I end today's show with this reminder. And remember, reality isn't happening to you. It's happening through you. Every thought, every frequency, every heartbeat is part of the great code that consciousness writes in real time. So dare to dream boldly, because the moment you do, the universe begins to reprogram itself in your favor. This has been Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger for curious souls connecting with extraterrestrial life, higher dimensions, and ancient shamanic wisdom. Next week on the podcast, I'm speaking with Ross Coulthart, who's an Australian investigative journalist, author, and documentary producer. He's from News Nation as a special correspondent, and he tackles subjects like unidentified aerial phenomena, UAPs, to mysteries that are often missing from the headlines. Thank you so much for joining us today on Dare to Dream.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.